The issue of sexuality is complex and central in ongoing debates. In this context, it is important to consider sexuality in marriage. When we fall in love, we look different. Every single part of us is improved by virtue of a natural tendency to be influenced by a feeling that affects us deeply. Love is the nourishment of innate human harmony that unfolds through unequivocal attitudes towards someone, a person. Umberto Muratore writes that the physical beauty, and even more the beauty of the soul that the body often leaves, transpire arouse in us the sensitive and spontaneous affections. If provoked, they turn into love. Rosmini is convinced that this kind of love is certainly harmful to the perfection of virtue because, in the present human condition, it binds the soul, taking away from it the freedom to give itself to good wherever good may be. This love leads to the sensuous affection, which is the affection engendered by mutual proximity and innocent physical contact of persons of the opposite or same sex when in conversation with each other or by their imagining the pleasure from such situations. The affection is reduced, therefore, to a desire or tendency to renew such pleasures. Not every pleasure caused by bodily contact is referred per se to the generative organs. In fact, we can see that movements relative to generation are entirely sui generis. In this condition, it is difficult to completely separate the two things. Only a few men who have a high moral virtue can succeed in this. While generally, what happens is that the path from sensual to sexual affection is therefore highly slippery and sometimes inevitable. The two complementary sexes come together with the intention of procreation, which is the example of a very deep love. The main purpose of marriage is certainly the happiness of the couple, who become one in love, for love, sexual union, that follows in the natural, generative way that may lead to the birth of children, who are a good wealth of marriage, but who are not necessarily, as we know, the purpose of marriage. The sexual union is the vertex of the union of two intelligent complementary beings who complete each other and who, through marriage, constitute a complete union. Rosmini believes that there are different types of union that prepare for this type of complete union. But first of all, we must consider the spiritual unions, which relate to truth, virtue and God Himself, because such are essential in order to avoid any interpretation that would consider the mere act of sex as being the culmination of a complete union. The sexual act is only the culmination of a process of union between a man and woman as a result of an awareness of values that transcend the mere sensibility of the physical act. Different components are involved in the sexual act. For Rosmini, when a man has sexual union with a woman, this involves all his heart, his feelings, his intellect, and his will. We could say that in the sexual act, all the powers of the intellectual being are involved. The sexual act is permissible only when it is directed at all men. If it only involved man's animality, the sexual act would be merely a response to a stimulus. Even the resulting sexual pleasure should not be condemned, provided it is framed in a specific context of the legitimacy of understanding. We must be attentive, because while it is true that the sexual act should not be condemned in itself, it is at the same time true for Rosmini that every sexual movement Therefore, that does not have generative union between spouses, as its immediate and in its abrupt disorder, contrary to the intention of nature and to the Creator's will. It is abhorrent to human instinct itself, when this has not been debased and become degenerate, and is reproved by human and divine law. Somebody could say that pleasures that are possible should be allowed, because if such pleasures are possible, it means that they are established by a wise Creator, who certainly did not create anything in nature that is aimless. Rosmini answers this provocative objection in this way: for the upright human being, there are no sexual pleasures outside marriage. There may be pleasures for the animal, but not for the complete human being, who is not only animal but principally rational and moral, and to whom every disordered pleasure is supremely hateful, abominable and painful. The ardor and pain overcome to pleasure so that they remove the nature of pleasure and make it a torment. As I said, every disordered pleasure is rejected by the moral human instinct, which loves the contrary virtue above everything else. Those who seek such pleasures as distorted and drown outside their own nature. Sexual pleasures between persons of the same sex, which an upright person will never want, are a sort of necessary consequence of the sexual tendency, whose legitimate mode of satisfaction is, however, in honest marriage. This consequence results from the limitation inherent in animal nature. But, as we said, all the defects of this consequence, considered physically, are opposed in a human being by the existence of intelligence and of noble instincts, instincts which intelligence is born to produce and does produce, provided the human being is not damaged. In animals, however, who lack reason as a brake and moderating influence, the Creator provides that the sexual instinct does not suffer any misuse, except rarely, through some infirmity or damage to their physical inclinations. As we can see, Rosmini does not condemn the man who is the victim of a sexual orientation that by general definition is aberrant, because the philosopher is concerned about the person who remains a person even when having committed the worst sins. It does not say, for example, that homosexuality is a malady, but a messy impulse that can be caused by several different factors. Only by accepting the doctrine of original sin, now less attended to than in the past, in relation to the Rosminian vision regarding the difference between sin and guilt, can we understand the limitations of human nature and certain impulses that may lead to an instinct that has difficulty in recognizing a specific natural and moral order. Rosmini does not judge as a cruel magistrate who looks down on man, but he considers it to be harmful to man to walk far from the path of perfection that every man is called to follow. Now, we can try to understand the nature of the sexual union from the perspective offered by Rosmini. He gives an extremely charming analysis which focuses on two main points. The first one: sexual union is an act of the soul. Second, the union of the sexes is a mutual communication of life. Let us begin with the first point. Rosmini wrote, "According to the Creator's most wise dispositions, the chief of all the different conditions of human nature is the difference between the sexes. The character of this difference is such that, far from impeding the full union of two human individuals through lack of uniformity, it accomplishes the union through diversity of form." The Creator has predisposed a wonderful appropriateness of form and organization of one body to the other. The immediate cause of this cannot be found in a principle of reason, but solely in the fact of animality, which according to its eternal concept is necessarily subject to such law and determination. The nature of sexual union, for which human nature is suitable in its lowest part, is not, I repeat, material, as if it could be achieved by the mere mechanical union of material parts. It is rather an activity of the active animal principle. This certainly operates in matter, but with an action of its own that differs greatly from any mechanical operation. I remind the reader of what I have said elsewhere. The animal principle is simple and is the soul itself. The act of sexual intercourse, in which generation takes place, as an act of the soul operating in bodies and through bodies. The soul does not act through particular parts to the exclusion of others. The whole animal contributes to the act, specially the whole nervous system stimulated by the soul. The ancient themselves knew this. Now we can consider the second point to understand why, for Wozmini, the union of the sexes is a mutual communication of life. He wrote, "In anthropology as an aid to moral science, I gave as my opinion that the sensations, at least those of touch, which we have from an animate body are specifically different from those of an inanimate body. From the former, we receive a communication of the soul itself, which gives life to the body that produces the sensation in us. Individual life, it must be noted, as an expansive force communicable to the bodies it is able to invade. It certainly has a power to make them one with itself, as we see in nutrition and other phenomena. We can have no great difficulty, therefore, in conceiving and admitting that a kind of communication of life take place between two living bodies when they make contact. One body feels the every soul of the other body. This is particularly true in the case of lovers, where each would fuse totally with the other, if possible. The channeling and communicating of life in this union is aided, or rather produced, by the spontaneous consent of the wills, that is, by default of the souls, the principles of animation. Sexual intercourse is certainly the most intimate of bodily unions. The two fundamental feelings seem for a moment to become one, so that the feeling of one is reciprocally the feeling of the other. No words can express this more effectively than those of Scripture, which define marriage as, "And the two shall be in one flesh," St. Matthew 19:5-6. Here, the unity of the flesh must be understood as the unity of life by which the flesh is vivified and in which both individuals share. The union of the sexes is therefore a vital, not a material union. In the act, which can last only a moment, life exercises the function by which it joins two living bodies in the way the parts of a single animated body are joined together. For example, the brain and heart of the same human being intercommunicate through organic, vital functions and make a single animal out of both. It is very interesting that Rosmini treats these issues in the philosophy of right, but it is clear that for him marriage is a very special form of union that should be defined with explicit characteristic that even involves a context concerning the nature of the rights and the consequent reflection on the value of the rights. We must be attentive at this point, because the philosopher introduces the explanation that the fact of the ordering of marriage to sexual union is for him the specific difference that distinguishes it from other kind of unions. Rosmini, in fact, wrote that although the other unions in marriage are presupposed and have even greater nobility, the sexual union is the final complexion of marriage. The ordering of marriage to this union is the specific difference between it and all other unions possible to human beings. Ancient traditions said that the first parents of mankind were androgynous, who were later separated. It was in fact logical that the propagated human species should consider it precisely androgynous and generation and paternity begin. Rosmini explains clearly, as I mentioned before, that procreation is not the purpose of marriage, but the effect of a sexual union that is possible inside the marriage. He wrote that according to the eternal idea, the Creator so ordered the animal nature that at the moment when sexual union reached its greatest degree of intimacy and the feeling soul of one partner tended with greater impetus to invade the bodily parts of the other, some particles should separate from the body of each, move towards one another, and meet in a place suitable for maintaining their life. In the act of detachment, these particles are not only alive, but at the highest degree of vital stimulation and, as it were, animated by double life. After union, they do not cease to live, even though partly divided from the individuals to whom they belong and from whom they were drawn by impetus of the souls that wished to unite. Through this division, the feeling preserved in them is no longer part of the feeling of the two individuals. They constitute, therefore, the first rudiments of a new animal destined to become a new human individual through communication of the light of God's face. There is no more apt way of expressing this mysterious fact of generation than the phrase of divine scripture in which the son of the parents is called their spark. This union described by Rosmini leads the reflection to consider a new fundamental principle that we can now understand clearly, the inconfusibility of persons. He wrote that conjugal society is a perfect union in accord with nature, a union between two human individuals of different sex, but one thing remains distinct in them, person. The spouses unite to form one nature out of two, but cannot form one person out of two. When God defined marriage, saying that the spouses must be one flesh, he said simultaneously that they will be two in one flesh. They will be two. It is true that the kind of personal communication also exists between lovers, and therefore between spouses, insofar as one enjoys the relationship of the other. But this kind of transfusion of persons neither intermingles then nor excludes their proper inalienable being. If the affection we are discussing changes from a spontaneous to a roused state, it produces a special loving phenomenon. It goes outside itself to the loved object. Petrarch indicates this. Sometimes, in the midst of sad tears, a doubt says me, how can these limbs live so far from their spirit? But love responds, don't you remember? This is a privilege of lovers, freed from all human qualities. In conclusion, we can say that Rosmini keeps alive the pure meaning of marriage, shows the nature of this union, demonstrates the necessity of understanding that this special union is about the two different sexes, man and woman, underlines the importance of sexuality, and explains the value that the marriage is, in accordance with that which ancient peoples have understood very well. It transcribes what Romans said about the marriage: the union of male and female, the sharing of all life, the communication of divine and human right, and said that the wife is accepted as companion in human matters and in divine house. With wonderful foresight, the Romans included in marriage that divine society about which we have spoken and which we have posited as the foundation of marriage. Thank you, and God bless you.